Talk Central is brought to you by TomTom Africa, a leading international enabler of accurate location-based platforms throughout Africa, offering innovative, comprehensive and high-quality digital maps to businesses and governments. For more information, visit tomtom.co.za/geospatial.
I'm Rehoboth Vanderberg.
And I'm Duncan McLeod, with extra background sounds in this episode, supplied by Max the Bulldog. Just letting you know, because it's not Rehoboth and me doing the heavy breathing.
This is Talk Central, episode 129, for the weekend starting 3 July 2015.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, where you'll find South Africa's best technology journalism.
That's right, Duncan. No headlines like, South African women want to stand when using the loo.
We'll leave those headlines to the tabloids. On Talk Central this week, we talk about Vodacom and Neotel. What else?
We also talk about cellular service in the Gautrain Underground and the launch of Apple Music.
Before we get to that, though, we need to pay the bills. We'll be back in just a moment.
The Vox Telecom Cloud is the future of business. Developed from the ground up, it's a turnkey, fully managed approach to the cloud. It offers you guaranteed support, a national network with true redundancy, fully managed services across all layers, and most importantly, a single point of accountability. The Vox Telecom Cloud. It's how cloud should be. To find out more about the Vox Telecom Cloud, SMS your name to 45454 or visit voxtelecom.co.za. Standard rates apply.
Well, welcome to the show. Hi, Richard.
How's it, Duncan and Max?
Max, the bulldog, yeah. Hopefully there won't be too many interruptions with the heavy breathing from the English bulldog department, but let's get into the news. I've done big news this week. I think it's now the candidate for it is Vodacom and Neotel, and the fact that the Competition Commission has decided to recommend to the Competition Tribunal that the deal be approved, but with a number of fairly stringent conditions. Mm. It's been over a year, I think it's about 15 months now, if I'm not mistaken, since Vodacom announced that it was making a 7 billion rand bid, all cash bid, to buy Neotel. The competition authorities have been investigating or probing the potential impact of the deal for that time, and have had a number of submissions they've had to consider, including objections from companies like Cell C and MTN, which are opposed to the deal, particularly the spectrum aspect of it, saying that Vodacom will get access to spectrum that will allow it to entrench its already market-leading dominance in the South African mobile market. So that's where the conditions have come in on this deal, and they seem fairly stringent. Maybe they're not. I mean, I guess if you talk to Cell C, they'll probably say that the conditions don't go nearly far enough. Mm. But what they've said is that Vodacom may not use Neotel spectrum for a period of effectively about 2 to 2.5 years. The latest they'll get access to it is the end of 2017. They may not use the Neotel spectrum at all for mobile services. Which is interesting that they've chosen the specific terminology mobile, because that, I think, still leaves Vodacom and Neotel in the clear to roll out non-mobile wireless broadband services, in other words, fixed wireless services.
Yes.
So I wonder if that means that Vodacom will use Neotel spectrum to roll out a national fixed wireless broadband network using LTE and LTE Advanced, because they'll have enough spectrum to do that, and will then at a later date, when the condition expires sometime in 2017, that they'll simply switch on mobility. So they'll build the network, and then once the deadline expires, they'll switch it on. Hey, we've got a national LTE Advanced mobile network on Vodacom. Come, customers.
That would be a very clever way of playing. They've got the tools, right? Mm. I mean, they've got what they need to do something like that, and the market certainly is more than ready for something that could potentially, you know, be a tough competitor to ADSL and potentially fiber in some regions where there isn't.
Mm. And they're certainly getting access to some really valuable spectrum. They're getting access in the 1.8 gigahertz band, which is the prime LTE band, and as well as in the 3.5 gigahertz band, much higher frequency. But it's great for deploying in dense urban areas and shopping centres, or, you know, using microcells. So some great spectrum that they're sitting on there, which Neotel hasn't been able to really use to all that greater effect. They have got an LTE network, but its coverage is fairly limited. With Vodacom's backing and cash, they'd be able to ramp that up very rapidly, while not being able to offer mobile-specific services at this stage. I suspect that they're going to look to build a fixed wireless alternative in the interim, I would imagine, that takes on Telkom, which is the other big competitor in the fixed wireless space with its LTE and LTE Advanced network on the 2.3 gigahertz band.
And there's still so much of South African demographic that's not nearly close to being covered by any kind of form of decent broadband. So it's a long-term play, or short and mid-term play at least. But I think you may have called it. I don't know. We'll have to come back in 2 years and see.
Have a look. Yeah. We'll revisit this in episode 383 or whatever it is. But interesting deal. That's the main restriction, the biggest condition, I think, that the Competition Commission has imposed on this. But they've also said that in the next 5 years, Vodacom has to commit to rolling out fixed line infrastructure to the tune of 10 billion rand.
Sure.
Which I think they probably were going to do anyway. So I'm not sure how much of a how stringent that particular condition is, and that fixed line doesn't mean just fixed line into your house. It can mean backhaul between towers. It can mean anything that's not part of the radio access network, effectively. Yeah. So they could actually use that to really deploy this nationwide. First of all, deploy the LTE on a fixed wireless basis initially, mobile later. In the radio access network, and then use their 10 billion rand or a big chunk of that 10 billion rand, not on fiber to the home, but on deploying the backhaul infrastructure to connect all those towers. I think they've perhaps got away with a bit from the Competition Commission on that side. I think the Competition Commission perhaps should have been more specific in how that 10 billion rand be spent if they wanted to see it have a real impact on the last mile in South Africa, which is where the real bottleneck is now. We need competition in fixed lines, and it's happening, but it's so far it's really come from a bunch of startups. It hasn't really come from the big incumbent operators.
And the way that all these things get interconnected, really, I mean, we have to wait for these companies to lay the groundwork, and then other companies come add on to the network, where, you know, Vodacom and Neotel could, you know, leapfrog a lot of these things and just put it up.
My worry is that you know, Vodacom has really played up this deal as building an alternative fixed line operator to Telkom, but I worry that behind the scenes that's not really their strategy. Yeah. I think their real strategy is still mobile, and Neotel is not so much about getting access. This is just my view on it, that Neotel is not so much about the access to the fixed line expertise, because Neotel doesn't really have that much fixed line expertise. I think this is 90% about mobile and spectrum.
I mean, if you've got the spectrum, you can use it. I mean, you've got a market that's yearning for the access.
But if they do roll out, you know, if FTTH becomes a big component of, of the deployment of the fixed line component of this, then that's great. But my worry is that they're going to be directing funds more to mobile, because Vodacom, after all, is a mobile company. It's what they understand. It's their DNA. They don't understand fixed line. And, you know, Neotel, while it was meant as the second fixed line operator in South Africa, has never really deployed fixed lines. Sure, it's done it in some businesses, but, you know, it doesn't offer fixed lines to end users. You know, that's a space that only Telkom really understands, and it's a space where the only real competition we're seeing today is coming from companies like Vumatel and Link Africa and other smaller startup guys.
We'll have to see.
Right, Gautrain, finally. MTN and Vodacom announcing this week that they have deployed 2G, 3G, and 4G on the underground stations on the Gautrain network in Gauteng. Why they're deploying 2G, I'm not quite sure anymore. I mean, I'm not sure what the point is of deploying 2G, particularly in an environment like that. They're doing it, and it's been long overdue. I mean, the Gautrain has been in place for
five years
or so. And this isn't the full Gautrain network. This is just the underground stations that are going to be covered. So you hop on a train and you head from Rosebank to the Johannesburg city centre, you're still going to not have coverage. Vodacom says it is working on train or in-train coverage, but at this stage this is only covering the underground stations where there was no connectivity before, which was a bit of a pain. I mean, you could get out of a train in Sandton, you can't make a phone call until you get up onto the street level. So, I mean, it's welcome that they're slowly making some progress here. You know, why on earth has it taken so long?
Good question.
And where's the, you know, I mean, this isn't complicated stuff. And you know, certainly not complicated in deploying it inside a train station.
Just repeaters you deploy, just
run a bit of fiber up.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. Obviously, deploying it on a train is a little bit more complicated, but quite a lot more complicated actually. But
the same principle should really apply. I mean, if you can put repeaters underground, you just have a train because it's. I mean, surely you should be able to.
I'm not sure technically how they do it in other countries. I'm not sure if the radio access equipment is actually on the train itself or in the tunnels.
It's just a moving base station, essentially.
I think it would have to be on the train itself, wouldn't it?
Mm.
Otherwise, you'd have to have antennas all the way through the tunnels. It'd be quite expensive.
Yeah, but those repeaters that you put on, I mean, you see a lot of companies have these in their parking lots. It's essentially just a dome-shaped, much of the same tech that they're using here, but the general technology is a dome-shaped repeater that you put on, and that just repeats the signal that you feed into it. Mm. It isn't rocket science. It's interesting to see why they took so long. I wonder if there were some regulatory things or maybe, you know, some issues with finalizing contracts.
Yeah.
Who gets what rights to these networks?
I'm not sure at all. It's worth a question. All right, let's talk a bit about the big international news this week. And I guess the biggest news was the release, finally, of Apple Music.
Yeah.
I've been playing with it a little bit. I signed up for the trial. 3-month trial. We immediately switched off the auto renew at 3 months.
As one does, yes.
Since I'm already a very happy user of radio, so I'm probably not going to switch from radio to Apple Music, but I'll give it a go and see how it goes.
Mm.
I haven't been able to find the Android app yet, but I did look on launch day. Maybe it's more clearly available in the store by now. But certainly it works well on my iPad. No complaints about it. Had to listen to Beats 1, the global radio station as well.
Yes.
Not my taste of music, so I won't be listening to it. But you know, it's professional, it's slick. I think it's going to steal a lot of the youth audience away from local radio stations like 5FM.
Yeah, and I think the brands they've put behind BBC Radio, behind Beats Radio 1, one of the DJs from there is actually from the BBC, and he was quite a well-known DJ in that platform. And what he brings with him is an understanding of music, from what I believe, that's quite broad and appeals to a broad range of music lovers. That's not just stuck to one genre like pop or rock and if they can get that right, I mean, they could essentially reinvent curated radio and maybe bring it back to how we all fell in love with radio. Is a DJ that you listen to late night who's got some insight into music or artists that you've never heard of, and he can bring that to you.
Yes.
To me, that's a very valuable proposition.
Yeah, I think that and as I say, it's not my taste in music, but I'm definitely not the target market for this thing. They're going for a mass audience, a mass youth audience, I think. And it's an interesting concept. I think the fact that Apple is getting into the space, which is an interesting move for a technology company, really, I think, suggests that people like Gareth Cliff have been getting into this thing at the right time.
But also keep in mind that, you know, Apple pioneered, when Apple pioneered the sale of music online with iTunes, I mean, it did change the industry as well.
Yeah.
A lot of companies followed suit, and then obviously streaming happened, and kind of Apple was late with deploying their own version of that.
It was. In fact, you know, a lot of people have criticized it for being so late. It was kind of unlike Apple, which in the past hasn't had any qualms about destroying its own business model to go forward. Like they've done with their hardware products. I think a lot of people have argued, and I think it's probably fair criticism, that they really did take a long time to bring out streaming and really sort of try and eke out the download business as long as they could.
Yeah, it could have been a financial decision, but on the other side, I think the relationship that Apple Music or that Apple has with its artists, I think, is different to a lot of other music services at that time, paid downloads and streaming.
Mm.
It's not the kind of thing I think that they would ever risk endangering. you know, if you're there's been a lot of controversy around artists not getting paid enough on these streaming services, and I think Apple had to be particularly careful with that.
Oh, we saw the controversy around Taylor Swift.
Yes, yes.
So they weren't paying any. They weren't planning to pay any of the artists
for the trial period.
For the trial period.
Now they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. What I do like about the Apple Music offering versus anything else that's out there, and that's something that might sway me to use it more regularly, is the fact that you can obviously upload your own music that's not on their library.
Oh, can you?
That you can stream to other devices.
You can do that with Google Music as well.
Yeah, sure, sure.
And I think Microsoft offers that service as well, if I'm not mistaken, with Xbox Music. So that's not a new thing, but... But I think they kind of have to do it, you know, because, you know, these catalogs, they've got a good catalog, 30 million songs, but not, you know, if you've got esoteric taste in music, not all the music you listen to is going to be on that service.
Yeah, well, even some good artists, I mean, you know how hard it is to find Metallica and Pink Floyd albums, or at least the albums that we want on these streaming services.
Yeah.
It's not, the upload of music isn't something that the likes of Symphy that I use often use, which, you know, you can say that. That's a reason enough to move over. Another thing for me is the family membership. I mean, if I look at my wife and myself streaming, we have to pay our own streaming service if we want to use it. We can't share playlists or anything like that, which is a bit limiting. With Apple Music, you know, paying R89 a month, which is...
Radio does that as well. You can pay a small additional membership amount. Yeah. I like the fact that it's interesting that the pricing has come in much lower than in the US. It's $10 a month in the US and R60 here. So it's about half the price. In South Africa.
I think they're trying to be very competitive. I think they made a conscious decision to be competitive.
I think they looked at it, because radio is $60 a month, Symphy is $60 a month. They looked at this market. I don't think they could have come in at $120 a month.
Oh, definitely not.
The question is, do they lose money at $60 a month? Are they losing money to come into markets like South Africa, where prices are set much lower than in the US? Or do they figure that because of bandwidth limitations in markets like South Africa, people aren't going to listen to as many songs as they do in the US, and so won't consume as much of the service, and they therefore don't have to pay as much over to the musicians?
Yeah, and let's be honest. I mean, Apple's waited long enough. I'm sure they've got enough market research behind their decisions now to be able to make those calculated choices for their services.
Yeah. But it's another player in the market. In the South African context, we never talk about Spotify, but that's still the biggest streaming music player in the world. I forget how many customers they've got. I think something like 6 million paying and 50 million in total. So they're the guys to beat, even though, weirdly, bizarrely, they've never launched here, even though there were some rumors about it 2 years ago. They were talking to Vodacom at one stage, apparently. But
yeah, there's certainly a lot more scarce in their rollouts. But the market is so saturated now, would it really matter if they come to South Africa?
I don't know. I mean, they probably don't even care about this market. But you know, if you play in that streaming space, you have to be everywhere. So I don't think it is a case of not caring about this market. You kind of have to care about every market. And we've seen Netflix admitting that recently. I mean, they're rolling out to something like 200 countries in the next 18 months, South Africa being one of them. They're probably not going to make much income from the South African market, but it's a bit of a land grab that's going on at the moment, and if you're not everywhere, you're nowhere.
Yeah, if you're not first, you're lost.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Quite Ricky Bobby. But my other question is in terms of rights. I mean, with movie rights and TV rights, obviously that's one thing, but with audio streaming rights, it used to be a thing where you couldn't stream. That's why we didn't get any of these streaming services, because there was no rights to stream to certain countries. But now that's probably not an issue, or surely it's not an issue anymore. It's even more of a reason for these guys to try and deploy.
I don't know. Sometimes, you know, I'm in radio and I want to listen. I'm listening to an album, and then like a track is grayed out because it's not available in your territory.
I hate that.
Why? And often it's just like an arbitrary track. It's not even the best track on the album or anything like that. It's just an arbitrary track that's grayed out.
You also get that on YouTube quite often, or not quite often. I find that with not even music these days, but you know, some video clips.
It's been like that for a while. Yeah, it's bizarre. I really don't understand these entertainment companies. I mean, you know, just make it available to everyone.
And clearly the artists aren't always benefiting from that. So the choice behind not streaming to a country isn't because the artist wants to maintain their royalties in a certain region.
I don't know what it is. It doesn't make sense to me.
But then I
haven't been able to make... I mean, I don't think the music industry does make much sense.
it never has.
No.
But I've been enjoying, just on a side note, SoundCloud, I've been enjoying from an independent artist point of view, and I find that fascinating. And then you partner crowdsource like Indiegogo or Kickstarter, I mean, art, it's really an artist's time now to, they still need a platform to kind of get recognized.
Yeah, yeah.
But once you have a fan base and you can grow that fan base, you've got all the outlets you need to I guess, sustain yourself.
Yeah.
And you have to tour, obviously, to make the big money.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting how the model has completely changed. And it's great as well because, you know, while the big radio stations still don't play, they still go for a specific sound and, you know, tend to play chart-topping hits and stuff
soft
like that.
Soft music, yeah.
There's such an explosion of creative music out there at the moment, and so many genres, and the ability to discover and explore and find new stuff is amazing. I mean, I've discovered so many bands since I've been subscribed to radio in the last year. You know, I'm absolutely amazed at the amount of music that's being produced on the sort of the cusp between jazz and progressive metal.
Yes, yes.
You know, bands like Seven Impale and, you know, stuff that most people have never heard of coming out of places like the north of Norway and stuff. Really incredible music that just will never get radio airtime.
Yeah, yeah. But isn't this why the curated radio is such a good thing, especially if the right curators behind it?
Yeah, yeah. I think there's not enough of it. I think that, you know, what would be fantastic if Apple did was curated radio for every genre of music.
I'm sure that's coming. I mean, if they can build a successful radio station on a streaming platform, I mean, they could potentially kill a lot of, you know, the kind of consumer radio that most people listen to in most countries. I mean, every country's got this radio station that plays all the commercial top 10 stuff.
Yeah.
You know.
It's fascinating. I wonder what it would mean for the future of music radio, because in 10 years or 20 years from now, you're not going to care how much data you're using on your phone.
Mm. I think if you've only got an FM receiver in your car, because your phone's going to stream it already.
Your car will probably have an FM receiver, but it'll have a, you know, SIM card in it, and you'll be able to listen to whatever station or whatever content you want to listen to from anywhere in the world. And that's has to change the whole radio model.
It's on-demand radio show, so you can still listen to a radio show. You just skip to the beginning if you're listening to it an hour later. You don't have to, you know, to miss that first hour of a particular DJ's radio. And again, I read somewhere that with Apple Music, I mean, they've got the potential to make the radio DJ a thing again.
Yeah,
you know,
because
this is the guy, the disc jockey that selects the music. It's not a suit sitting in an office somewhere making sure that, you know, these artists rise to the top because that's what the record companies want to promote.
Yeah. That's where the music industry went wrong, was when the record companies started dictating to the radio stations what they must play.
Yeah.
And when that happened, I think the whole thing fell to pieces. And to the record, that's why one of the reasons the record industry is in so much trouble today.
But I wanted to ask you, when you were talking about the new artists you've started listening to, I mean, how do you discover them? On do you discover their albums by browsing on radio?
No, or through radio make recommendations based on my musical taste. And what you can do is you can fire up your own radio station, which then plays music based on what you've played previously. And it plays, you can select, there's a slider. You can go from adventurous to I forget the term. It's adventurous to safe or something like that.
I like
so
that.
If you select safe, you're going to get musicians you've probably 80% of the time listened to before. If you go slide all the way to the other end and go adventurous, you're probably going to get 80% new stuff that you haven't heard before, but based on the genre that you like, so what other people have been listening to. And
that's cool.
It's got some quite clever algorithms that calculate, well, you know, because Duncan's been listening to this particular set of bands, he's probably going to like this band as well, because not other people who listen to those bands listen to this band. And it's true. I mean, that's how it works. And so I've discovered tons of new bands in that way, just clicking on the recommendations tab in radio. And it's like, ooh, that's a nice, you know, either you get it through your own radio station, where it's just serving it up randomly, or you go in there and say, well, that looks like an interesting album cover, click, wonder if this is any good, play. And suddenly, you know, every so often you come across something that's absolutely mind-blowing, and then, you know, you've got a new favorite band.
Yeah, that's a very clever way of... And that, when you were saying that just reminded me, one of my favorite ways of discovering new music, or at least remembering the new music that I discover, is to Shazam the track.
Yeah.
And what I found was...
I use SoundHound, but it's very similar.
Oh, yeah. Now, with Shazam, you can actually, if you've got a... Obviously, if you're an iTunes user, you can buy the song, but now with Apple Music you can stream the song directly.
Yeah.
Which I found was quite interesting. And radio, there's also a link for radio on Shazam, but as the you know, I'm not a radio subscriber.
Oh, so is there? I must look at that. Okay, because I don't think you can do it through SoundHound. I think you can do Spotify through SoundHound. So maybe I should switch across to Shazam then if it's got radio.
Yeah, it definitely has radio built into it. Okay. And that's a nice, I think that's also a nice way of, because I'm a big fan of, you know, if I hear something, I would quickly record, even if it's on a movie.
I do it all the time. Especially when I'm driving around, it's like, oh, this, you know, if I'm listening to the radio, which I do, yeah, I quite like Mix FM, Midrain Bass Station. They play some good rock music.
Oh, yeah.
And if a song comes on, I don't know, it's just the sound hard in the car. So, oh, okay, that's cool. And then...
And you get back to it later, but now, I mean, if you can...
But now you can listen to it immediately through
radio. And you should be able to then add it automatically to a playlist, if you want, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm just opening up the app here.
You need some music, man.
Yeah, you can buy it on iTunes, or you can... I mean, you could have always done that, but if I go to my tags... Yeah, there's radio, and I can listen to it on music.
Oh, brilliant.
Which is kind of what, I mean, I just usually stream the music video because I didn't have access to those two services.
To YouTube.
Yeah, but the problem is if you then switch off your phone screen or if you go to another app, it cuts off.
Oh, it
doesn't. Doesn't play in the background. It's not a background music player.
I see. Okay.
But yeah.
Cool. So yeah, interesting. Apple coming into a crowded market, but with a very good offering by the looks of it. And it's going to... You know, shake things up even further.
And do not underestimate the. You know, a lot of people trust Apple because they've got the entire ecosystem on there already. For them to then, on their iTunes account, just subscribe to a service without them having to do another credit card transaction with another company.
Yeah.
That's probably going to be one of their biggest pulls for the average consumer who's an Apple user.
You're right. And a lot of people, I think, will get into streaming for the first time through Apple Music because they just. Either didn't know about it or couldn't be bothered.
Yeah.
Now there's an app on the iPad.
And how many kids grow up with iPads now? I mean, when they start listening to music, what are they going to do? Stream Apple Music.
No, I think Spotify's got a big fight on its hands for a number one spot in the next year or two.
Yeah. Yeah. And Apple's obviously got the right people behind them. I mean, the Beats acquisition was a big thing for them. That brought a lot of technology that a lot of other guys don't have. And the curated playlist.
Well, I will never ever buy another pair of Beats headphones. Junk.
I still enjoy them. I've got an old pair of in-ear Beats headphones that came with an old HTC that I had many years ago. Yeah. And if I listen to that compared to my Apple in-ear earphones, which are also a good set of headphones, I do prefer the extra bass that the Beats deliver.
Okay.
Call me a techno head, but I love a bit of bass. And
well, my Beats just broke. It stopped working after about 12 months. So, and I was never very happy with the sound. And I had the over-ear ones, and they also weren't that comfortable. I about 2 months ago, I bought a pair of Bose QC25s. They're expensive. The sound that out of those is the best I've ever heard out of a pair of headphones. It's really amazing.
But I mean, that's the price of a cell phone, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're not cheap. But if you want the best, the Bose, I think, are the ones to look at. Yeah.
I think the next move for me on the music front is definitely getting a set of studio monitors.
Yeah.
And I think that's where you get the best sound.
Yeah.
In office, at least.
Yeah.
But yeah. That's cool. The music.
Well, that's the news for this week. Let's move on to our regular features departments. We had a bit of debate about, you know, who should be the winner this week, and it's a product really, which is a strange choice. But anyway, I've been playing around with Windows 10, and I'm absolutely loving it. The latest builds are really stable, robust. It looks good. They've really done a good job with the design. Really impressive software, and it's they've released three builds this week. I'm running not the very latest one, which came out today on Friday morning, but the one that came out, I think it was yesterday or the day before yesterday. 1.059, I think it is, and it's really for release.
Now I'm really looking forward. This weekend project is installing it on my home theater PC.
Okay.
Because I saw what you did with what it looks like on a big screen. It's absolutely amazing. I think that is going to be a clincher for many people to get that experience on a big screen TV.
I think that I think a lot of people are. I think in this current generation of Windows, it's coming. Are going to be using Windows on big screen TVs. It's where television entertainment is going. You don't want the set-top box anymore. You want an internet-connected PC connected to your TV.
Because we often sit in front of the PC doing other things like PC stuff. That's not necessarily just browsing TV shows, which is great to have. If you have a few people over, you want to show them something or you want to load some photographs, load a website to go check something.
Yeah, indeed. In fact, I've connected I use an Intel NUC, next unit of computing. It's a tiny little PC, an Intel Core i3 processor, and it's running Windows 10. And I connected a card reader to it now, so that I can plug in my camera card. And just look at pictures on the TV.
Nice,
much nicer than sitting around a laptop.
Yeah, exactly.
So there you are. Windows, this week is Windows 10, which is coming out in about 4 weeks now.
Yeah.
It's almost here.
And sign up for the partner program.
The technical preview program. Windows Insider program.
Yeah, that's it.
If you want to get it. And by the way, it looks like you're going to be able to continue to run Windows 10 technical preview or stay as part of, I don't know what they actually technically call it now, but you'll be able to stay part of the Windows Insider program after Windows 10 is actually launched.
So you'll get an update that makes it the final retail version, and then updates after that would give you the early access to the new updates.
You'll continue to be on the early access program, and apparently there are going to be a whole bunch of rings available, so it's not just the fast and slow ring. You'll be able to have a whole bunch of options in terms of how often you get the updates and that sort of thing. You'll also have the option, of course, of just staying with the final release when it comes out.
I think that's a very clever part of Microsoft's behalf. I mean, that'll not only ensure that their software is going to be super stable, but just giving people, the guys that really want to play with it, give them early access to the features. Yeah. I mean, it's a no-brainer.
I'm staying on the technical. I'll stay on the Windows Insider program for sure.
Yeah.
I'll probably put myself on a slow ring, so that I don't accidentally destroy my computer.
Because we do load it on our production machine, to be honest.
Of course, what's this about putting in our test machines?
No.
Live dangerously.
You don't use a test machine every day.
What's a test machine? Just load it on the main PC. I've actually just switched my main production desktop PC onto the fast ring.
But I think you can't resist, it's like crack.
It is. I think it's safe though, because we're quite close to release now, so these bulls are pretty much ready. Once Windows 10 actually ships, I'll probably switch back to the slow ring.
You can leave your TV on the fast ring.
Okay, the TV's on the fast ring. Yeah, exactly. Who cares if that thing is installed?
Oh, Windows 10, don't disappoint us, please.
Cool. Our loser this week, and I'm not going to spend an enormous amount of time talking about it, but the story's up on Tech Central, and that's the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, which is an absolute shambles. We reported this week that Temba Peary, who's a Deputy Director General in the department, was fired. This happened on Wednesday, I think, by the Director General, Rosie Sekesi. This is after he resigned in mid-May, and his resignation was then rejected by the Minister, Siyabonga Gqwele. But the department's in a real mess. Another one of the DDGs, Gifu Telezi, was fired by SMS.
Sure.
That's part of a whole arbitration process now that's going on. He seems quite confident of winning that arbitration process. Temba Peary's now been fired. He's livid about what's happening. The minister's overseas, travelling in China, on official business apparently, but he's not around. And doesn't really seem to do much in the department to try and address the problems that are going on there. The problem seems to be really centred on this DG, but it seems to be related to two SIU investigations that are going on. One into a very dodgy deal involving a company called Media Corner for the supply of advertising and marketing materials around the digital migration process. The department spent over 750 million rand on that. Talk about there's all sorts of speculation about who's connected to who and how these deals happened, but the whole department is in a mess and needs to be cleaned out, and it's really worrying because this is the department that's supposed to be coming up with policy, urgently needed policy for the ICT sector, which it just isn't doing. Like on Spectrum, for example, nothing's happening. I think we're starting to get insight now into why it's not happening. It's because this department is completely dysfunctional. So it's very worrying, and the whole department very rightfully, I think, deserves to be named as our loser of the week, and possibly the loser of the year.
Loser of the year, yeah.
When we get around to that later in the year.
We just need people in that department to actually care about, the industry, the sector.
Yeah, exactly.
They clearly don't.
No.
They clearly have no vested interest in furthering South Africa's ICT.
No.
It's ridiculous.
Anyway, what's your pick this week?
Let's go to happier things, yes. My pick is something I've actually been dreaming of since I was a kid. Every kid dreams of becoming an astronaut. And what's the next move up from that to virtually experience it? My pick for this week is a website called You're the Cast. That's urthecast.com/live for this particular feed. And it's a live feed of Earth from space. You're the Cast, the website, works with NASA on this, and they've got a satellite 400 kilometers above Earth's surface with four high-definition cameras pointed at Earth, and then they obviously switch between these cameras throughout the stream. But it's absolutely fascinating. If you haven't yet done so, do yourself a favor and go have a look at it. You can be guaranteed to see about 16 sunrises and sunsets as the satellite moves around the Earth or with the Earth.
That's very cool. I'm going to put that on my TV.
I actually did it the other day. It's a 720p stream, so I mean you're going to go through your bandwidth, but I guess nothing more than streaming Netflix. And it looks absolutely incredible to see. You know, if you can spot Africa when it comes around, I mean it's you know, you get goosebumps. It really is.
That's fantastic.
Just having problem reconnecting to the feed now, but
probably my internet connection. The satellite probably hasn't crashed through the upper atmosphere.
Oh, yeah, no, I think we're good. But definitely go check it out. You're thecast.com/live. Live webcam feed from space.
Very cool. Go check it out. It's thecast.
You're the cast.
You're thecast.com/live. Cool. My pick this week is actually something I reviewed on the site this week. It's Microsoft's Sculpt Ergonomic Desktop Keyboard and Mouse Combo. And I've never used an ergonomic keyboard before. It's one of these ones that's raised in the middle with a gap in it, and you put your hands on either side.
I used to love the old ones, the blue one. Remember the blue one that came out many years ago?
I don't actually. Series. It's not something I've really paid attention to because I've always thought I'd hate an ergonomic keyboard. I mean, when I saw these things in the retail store for the first time, when Microsoft first brought them out, I thought, how on earth could you possibly use something like that? It looks awful. And so I just steered clear of them. I decided to try out the Sculpt Ergonomic Desktop, and I'm a convert. I can't go back.
It's comfortable, huh?
It's very comfortable. And I estimate I can probably type 10 to 20% faster than on this keyboard than I did on my old keyboard. I don't know, it feels, it's hard to describe, but I the way it's been designed, and there is a learning curve. Mm. If you're coming from a regular flat keyboard, it takes a good few days before you stop making terrible mistakes when you're typing. I think it is designed for touch typists. So if you're one of those people who peers at their keyboard with their two fingers pointed at it, then this keyboard's probably not for you. But if you're a touch typist, then it really works amazingly well. And I just found, if I'm working there and I've got a stream of thoughts going on, the keyboard kind of gets out the way and I can just type and go. It's true you could do that on a flat keyboard as well, but there's something enhanced about the experience, which is really hard to describe. But it's so comfortable to use, and I feel it has an impact on my productivity.
It's because the keyboard is designed around the placement of your wrists in a comfortable way when you type, and the proximity of those keys to your fingers at that angle.
Yeah.
Which I mean, let's be honest, a normal keyboard, as comfortable as it might be for somebody that's seasoned typing on it, it's still a straight rectangle.
It puts strain on your wrists. You're right. On a flat keyboard, especially flat desktop keyboards, I find if I'm writing a long article or something, and I've been typing for 15 minutes, I have to lift my arms up suddenly and shake them because they're really starting to get sore from the typing. Whereas on this ergonomic keyboard, I can go for half an hour, 45 minutes, just bashing out thoughts and no impact at all.
And the raise, because it's raised in the front, your palms sit high with your fingers naturally hanging over the keyboard.
Exactly. If you haven't tried an ergonomic keyboard and you've been tempted by one and you're a touch typist, it's worth checking out. And this is a really beautifully designed keyboard. It looks really good on your desk. The mouse is a little more controversial. It's sort of a bubble-shaped thing. But it's also very comfortable. I thought, why when you're designing an ergonomic keyboard would you produce a big bulbous mouse like this, which can't be comfortable? But actually, the mouse is very comfortable as well.
Because your hand fits over it comfortably.
It does, exactly.
Without,
yeah.
I mean, normally your fingers are perched up trying to get to everything.
It's I've got a few gripes with the mouse. It's easy to, there's a back button on the side where your thumb rests, which is easy to press sometimes, which wasn't, I don't think it's that great. I think it's a bit of a design flaw. But the keyboard is fantastic. If you're thinking of getting an ergonomic, or you've looked at them in the store and wondered, you know, is it worth it? It's worth it.
Yeah, I will vouch for that. I used to use them many years ago, but
Why did you stop? Because you moved to a laptop.
Yeah, I moved to a laptop. But also at the time, Microsoft had that range out, and they stopped it for a while. Because there was, I think I'm talking about early 2003, 2004, 2005 maybe. Then they stopped producing those for a while, and mine broke. And I just, nobody sent one for me to review, and then I moved on to other things.
Okay.
But it's a great technology.
Cool. Well, that's a wrap, I think. As always, if you've got any feedback on the show, please send us an email or leave a comment on the post. We'd love to hear from you. Our email address is info@techcentral.co.za. From Rachel and myself, until next time, take care. Ciao.
Ciao. Oh!